And there are several sections. One section is Putana is killed. First, right off the bat. And then Shakatasura, the cart demon. And then Nanda Maharaj goes to Mathura to pay taxes because he's head of the cowherd community and he pays taxes to the king of Mathura. While there he has some discussion with Gargamuni, the celebrated astrologer for the royal family, and in a secret place, in a cowshed, appropriate place, name-giving ceremony for Krishna and Balaram. So Krishna is given some names, and one of them, of course, is Krishna. Another is Vasudeva, because Garga says, previously your son was born as the son of Vasudev, meaning previous lifetimes or previous yuga cycles. Krishna was born as the son of Vasudev. And then he says a number of things. But your son will have powers like Narayan. Doesn't say he's Narayan. Doesn't say he's not Narayan. He just says he'll have powers like Narayan. And with those powers, he'll protect the community of Vrindavan, so take good care of this little boy. And several other very important things, 8 verses. And Balaram is given his names and, you know, so forth. And then they go back to Vrindavan, they have a big festival involving brahmanas. Krishna is not yet 45 days old. You know, so, because name giving, according to Vedic practice or tradition, the name giving ceremony must be performed before that time. So he's just a little baby. And so then the ladies come, and you know what, when there's a new baby, what ladies do when there's a new baby, they get like goo goo gaga about over the little baby. So they do that with Krishna. Only they're pure devotees and Krishna is the personality of Godhead. And then very quickly, it's their stages, but he starts to crawl, he and Balaram. And it describes watching him crawl, and then he goes zigzag, he doesn't go in a straight line. And everyone's clapping and laughing. And then very quickly, long before most children start to walk, he starts to walk, becomes a toddler. And there's all this description of he walks a step, wobbles and tumbles, and Mother Jasoda picks him up and does what mothers do with little children. And then he looks at her and she smiles and he smiles. And it's just like the motherly affection, only with the personality of Godhead. Then he takes 2 steps. He turns and looks at her and runs back, and she opens her arms and he, you know, so all those little baby things that mothers love. And Krishna loves. He loves that affection of Mother Jasoda, pure love. And then there's, not in the Bhagavatam, but elsewhere, he's learning to talk. And that's real cute. And Balaram's learning to talk. And then very quickly he learns how to walk. And once he learns how to walk, he runs. And then he goes through Vrindavan with Balaram and the cowherd men. They have sons, but they have affection for Krishna, unlike even their affection for their own sons. Their hearts melt just seeing him. So it's the parental affection time in that chapter. And then he does his muck and chore pastimes, his stealing butter. And there's a long section describing in detail what he does. And then the cowherd ladies that are Mother Jasoda's age and her peer group, they come to her home and start complaining. He steals butter. And then, you know, with all the details, detail, so skip the details. It's Very nice. And then what the acharyas say, one of the things that Krishna wanted to do was stir their parental affection. And another thing he wanted to do was experience the happiness of Mother DeSoto scolding him. Now, most kids don't want their mom to scold them. But Krishna wanted. It's part of, because he knew it was affection. That's the place where the scolding would be coming from. But Mother DeSoto didn't scold him. She just hugged him and shook her head and said, "Why do you do these things?" And so Krishna wanted her to scold him. So he did something that would cause her to scold him. He ate dirt. Well, whether he ate dirt or didn't eat dirt, the cowherd boys said he ate dirt. And then there's a back and forth. He said they're liars. And she said, "Why would they lie? They're not your enemies. They're your friends. And there's your older brother Balaram, and he wouldn't lie. So why are you saying you didn't do this? Why are you saying they're liars?" He said, "If you don't believe me, you can look in my mouth." So she looked in his mouth, and you know what she saw. And it was actually the second time, because when he was younger, once he was just yawning, like a little child will sometimes, and she looked in his mouth and she saw the same thing. Only this gives lots of detail, details and details and details. She saw the, like Arjuna saw the universal form and she saw the universal form. The description is not identical. It's a different perspective on that feature of Krishna. But all the details of the universe she saw, including she saw herself looking inside Krishna's mouth, inside Krishna's mouth. And then she started to consider, what just happened? And she went through some options and ruled them out. Said, "Maybe I'm dreaming." She said, "No, I'm not dreaming. Maybe it's a mystic apparition created by the demigods, Devamaya." She said, "No, I'm too insignificant. Why would the demigods bother with me? Maybe I'm just deranged." And she said, "No, I'm quite normal, very rational." Then maybe this is one of those things that Gargamuni said, that this boy will have potencies like Lord Narayan. So maybe it's some of Lord Narayan's potencies, just creating this appearance of this thing, the whole universe. I mean, with all the detail. And then she flowed very quickly into the mood of praying to Narayan, who was her worshipable deity in their home. And Lord Narayan this and that and that and that and that, and please protect my son. And then she went to another mood, which was a rise of detachment. He's not my son, and Nandaraj is not my husband, and I'm not the queen of the whole of Braja, and I'm just this insignificant person. And then she got very motherly again, because and he explains that Krishna wanted her mother, the scolding was over. Now he wanted her motherly affection in some other way. And she was too busy, like, responding to what happened. She forgot her mother, you know. For just a few moments, she became perplexed. So that's a secondary rasa. Astonishment is a secondary rasa. So Krishna covered her with yoga maya, and she just said, whoever he is, he's my son, and he can't be the personality of Godhead, because if whenever I'm not there, he starts to cry. And some little inconvenience, and he comes running, and you know, so he can't be the personality of Godhead. He's just my beloved son. Then the section concludes with Shukadeva Goswami saying, some people understand the Supreme Lord this way from this scripture, and then another way from another scripture, another way from another scripture. But Mother DeSoto, she's even beyond that. She just sees Krishna as her son, and there's nothing else. Most exalted personality. And Then Maharaj Parikshit, who's hearing all this, speaks two verses. One is a question, the other is an appreciation. The question is, what austerities did Nanda and Yasoda undergo in their previous lives to then now come to this position where they have such love for Krishna? And the second was an appreciation. Although Vasudeva and Devaki gave birth to Krishna, they didn't experience his pastimes of childhood. And Nanda and Yasoda, they're immersed in his childhood pastimes. They're Mahabhaga, most fortunate. So Shukadeva Goswami ended in ecstasy, and Maharaj Parikshit is in this same mood of ecstasy. And then comes the section that we're discussing now. There's four verses where Shukadeva Goswami describes something very different than what we hear in the next chapter 9. He describes Drona and Dara. It's a little technical. I'll go slowly. Nanda and Yasoda, they're literally expansions of Krishna's body, according to our acharyas. He has a spiritual form, and they're expansions of his form. They're his shakti. They're not jivas, living entities that become something. They're eternally in Krishna Loka, mother and father. And by the Lord's instruction, they expanded themselves. Nanda expanded himself as Drona and took up residence in the heavenly realm, a partial expansion called Angsa. And Yashoda expanded herself as Dara, the wife of Drona. And they reside in the heavenly planets. So they have the same mood as who they're from, and we're going to be reading about it, so you're prepared now. And whenever Krishna appears, they, Drona and Dara, offer a prayer to Lord Brahma, requesting, we would like to have, we're childless, we would like to have the Supreme Lord as our son. Please give this benediction. And he smiles and says, so be it. And when Krishna, before Krishna appears in this world, you appear first as their mother and father, and then you'll be able to experience the pastimes. So now there's slightly different versions, but the main predominating version is, because they're expansions of Nanda and Yasoda, when it's time for Krishna's appearance, Krishna descends from the spiritual world with his associates, and they come first, Nanda and Yasoda. They're going to be his parents. So they appear, and Drona and Dara enter into the bodies of Nanda and Yasoda. And then when the pastimes are over, Krishna sends them back to the heavenly planets. It's because they're just expansions. So Drona and Dara did put a sign out the door saying, nobody home, back after Krishna's pastimes are over. It was their expansion. So they returned to that position of Drona and Dara in the heavenly realm. So then, we're going to start with text 51. Where, okay. Therefore, Sukadeva Goswami is speaking, O Maharaj Parikshit, best of the Bharatas, when the Supreme Personality of Godhead became the son of Nanda Maharaj and Yashoda, they maintained continuous, unswerving devotional love in parental affection. And in their association, all the other inhabitants of Vrindavan, the gopas and gopis, developed the culture of Krishna bhakti. Let's read the purport. This is Prabhupada's purport. We're also going to read commentary from other acharyas, but chapter 8, Purport. Prabhupada's purports went through chapter 13 of Canto 10, so this is Prabhupada's purport. Although, when the Supreme Personality of Godhead stole the butter, curd, and milk of the neighboring gopas and gopis, this teasing superficially seemed troublesome. In fact, it was an exchange of affection in the ecstasy of devotional service. The more the gopas and gopis exchanged feelings with the Lord, the more their devotional service increased. Sometimes we may superficially see that a devotee is in difficulty because of being engaged in devotional service, but the fact is different. When a devotee suffers for Krishna, that suffering is transcendental enjoyment. Unless one becomes a devotee, this cannot be understood. When Krishna exhibited his childhood pastimes, not only did Nanda Maharaj and Yashoda increase their devotional affection, but those in their association also increased in devotional service. In other words, persons who follow the activities of Vrindavan will also develop devotional service in the highest perfection. Well, here's, before I go on with the commentary, I'll just mention a few things. There's different categories of personalities who take part in Krishna's pastimes. The essential ones are his eternal associates in Krishna Loka. They descend with him and they perform pastimes with him. And a second category is when back in Canto 10, Chapter 1, when the demigods went to the milk ocean and prayed to Lord Vishnu, "Help! The earth is overburdened with demoniac kings, and Mother Earth over here in the form of a cow has pleaded for our helping her. Please take birth on earth." And he said, "Okay. Very soon I'll appear. Before I go, please tell the demigods," this is Brahma he's speaking to, "instruct them that they should also take birth and they can participate and assist me in my pastimes." So Brahma conveys that message. So some of them appear and some of them, a partial incarnation appear, like Drona and Dara. And there's others from the heavenly realm into this realm. So that's the second category. Then there's a third category. The third category is those who in their previous life have become perfect. Sadhana. Sadhana siddhas. We know what sadhana means. Practice. Devotional practice. And siddha means you become perfect. When you become perfect through sadhana, that you become a sadhana siddha. And where do you go? You don't go straight to Krishna Loka, but you go to the place where Krishna is performing his earthly pastimes, somewhere in the universe, some universe, and the eternally perfect souls train up the sadhana siddhas. Here's how you do your service, here's, you know, here's the mood, here's the program. Like apprenticeship. It's common sense. People do it all the time. So, those are three categories. Here's one detail of that third category. There's a group of gopis called Rishi Chari gopis. And those are the sages during Ram's pastimes in the previous yuga that wished to have a conjugal relation with the personality of Godhead, and he said, next lifetime. So they became sadhana siddhas in that group of Rishi Chari gopis. They were sages that became perfect and had entered into the mood of becoming gopis trained up by the Nityasiddha gopis. There's lots of room for gopis in the spiritual world. So Nanda and Yasoda, being eternally perfect, they set the mood. He's the king of the cowherds, and he's not just like has a post, and he's not qualified for the post. He has enormous spiritual influence, and by his spiritual influence, he helped all those persons in Vrindavan to further develop their bhakti to the highest perfection. That's what Prabhupada's purport says. Okay, so now Vishwanath, we're going to hear about Drona and Dara. There's two names by which Krishna is addressed in the verse we just read, text 51. One is Janardana. Janardana is commonly in our, like in Bhagavad Gita, it's a name for the super soul, Janardana. But this isn't, they're not addressing Krishna's super soul. They're addressing him in a different mood, in a different manner. Jana, in this case, means Gopi Jana. Jana means people. And Gopi Jana, like Gopi Jana Balaba, Gopi Jana. The Gopi cowherd damsels. And then the other word, Ardana, means tormenting or asking. Krishna is called Janardana because he tormented the gopis by stealing butter and other mischief. This is the elder gopis. And asked them for breast milk when he was a little boy. You know, the stealing, Brahma stealing of the calves and cowherd boys. You know that pastime? Yeah. So for 1 year, Krishna manifested himself as each of the cowherd boys and calves. So the cows could have Krishna as their calf. And the mothers could have Krishna as their son. So he, as a calf and as a child, accepted milk from the gopis and from the cows. Nanda and Yashoda's devotion for Janardhan existed from previously Asit and was superior, Nitaram, to that of all the other gopas and gopis. It is understood from this that the other gopas and gopis like Drona and Dara had also practiced bhakti like Drona and Dara in previous lifetimes. So the other persons who were participating in the pastimes, like Drona and Dara, they were enriched by the excellent affection of Nanda and Yasoda. What he's saying. Jiva Goswami writes, because of their bhakti, that's Nanda and Yasoda, the Lord became their son, and not the son of anyone else. Because of the purity of their bhakti, he became their son. He is prayed to, Janardane, by others, like Brahma. In his prayers comes chapter 14. But is not obtained by them, since he was the most rare form, Swayam Bhagavan Bhagavati, Krishna. That's another name used in this text, 51. Their bhakti, Nandan Yasoda's bhakti, was more praiseworthy than previous bhakti. That's Dronanjara, who had entered into them. They became enriched by Nanda's and Yasoda's bhakti. That praiseworthy bhakti also existed in the chief cowherd men and women who had naturally intense vatsalya, parental affection. Sanatan Goswami writes, because of Brahma's words, that was, he told the demigod to take birth, he who was not a son became a son of Nanda and Yashoda directly, not being born from Vasudeva and Devaki. He was born with, along with a female form, Mahamaya or Yogamaya. If he was not their son, the intense bhakti would not be possible. He had the spiritual form of a son. This indicates their qualification of eternal bhakti. So let's, you would like to know a secret? It's a secret you can tell other people, but it's not a well-known secret. So you may think, what, you got a hole in your head or something. But here's the secret. It's a mystery. We very usually hear that Krishna was born in the prison house of Kamsa, the son of Vasudeva and Devaki, in forearm form and the whole thing. And we very rarely hear that Krishna was born as twins, also simultaneously, the same night, in Gokul. We hear that Mother Yasoda had a female child, Yogamaya. But our acharyas describe, and there's scriptural reference that supports it, she actually had twins. Krishna was the firstborn, and Yogamaya was the secondborn, so she was the younger sister. And when Vasudev brought his son to the side of Mother Yasoda, the Vasudev Krishna, now in a little child form, merged or entered into the body of the first child, the boy, Swayam Bhagavan Krishna, because he's the source of everything. And there was a second child, female child, and that's the female child that was brought back to the prison house of Kamsa. So what's being said here is actually Krishna was born as the son of Nanda and Yasoda, not just to switcheroo at night. Should I say it again? Your eyes are rolling. Okay.
Yeah, that's
right. Okay. Okay. He was born along with a female form, Mahamaya or Yogamaya. If he was not their son, the intense bhakti that they had, Nanda and Yasoda, would not be possible. He had the spiritual form of a son. This indicates their qualification of eternal bhakti. Paragraph. There is destruction of birth and the rest of samsara by remembering him. Just by remembering Krishna, you overcome birth and death. He is prayed to, Janardane, by others like Brahma, but Krishna is not obtained by them since he is the most rare form. This indicates that he is the Supreme Lord, but he also manifests sweet form qualities and pastimes, Bhagavati. This is the great fortune of Nanda and Yashoda. Among the cowherd people, the bhakti of these two is at all times special. Among all the cowherds with vatsalya, bhava, parental affection, those two had special bhakti because he was their son directly. And then speaking about Prikshit, because the verse says, O descendant of Bharata. That's how Prikshit is addressed. So now the commentary says, just like you, you have special bhakti for Krishna, O chief descendant. So Nanda and his wife had special bhakti for him also. Since Drona and Dara are expansions of eternal Nanda and Yashoda, their bhakti is naturally the highest, Nanda and Yashoda. Now, they have merged into their origins, Nanda and Yashoda, their bhakti, and the bhakti of the other cowherds is constant, as per the words of Brahma. Comes in chapter 14 later. Because of Brahma's blessings, the cowherds had this bhakti, whose nature is to never be fully satisfied, but constantly endeavor to please the Lord. This is now repeating another theme. That's on, in the stage of prema, it's not like, okay, now I made it. No. It's not the material kind of satisfaction. Like, let's say, when you eat a meal, at a certain point, you know, somebody may say, would you like some more of this and that? And you say, no, I'm full. There's no point of feeling full for those who are pure devotees. There's always endeavoring further and further and further to please the Lord. So get used to it. It's a good position. Next paragraph. Just as Krishna respected Shiva and accepted the blessing from him to obtain Samba as a son. So this is another one of those, the demigods appearing on earth to take part in Krishna's pastimes by the order of Brahma. So one of those is Krishna's son Samba. Who is, those who like to read Krishna book, who is Samba the son of? Who is the mother? Jambavati. Jambavati. You know who is Jambavati, right? No? It's a really nice story. You know the Shyamantaka Jewel story? Shyamantaka Jewel?
The Jewel?
The Jewel.
Oh, that, yeah.
Yeah. So the jewel was in the cave with Jambavan.
Oh, yeah.
And so his daughter was Jambavati. So Jambavan gave the jewel and his daughter to Krishna. So Krishna married Jambavati. She was, And so that was one of the eight principal queens. And, the first son of Jambavati and Krishna was Samba. And Samba later is the one who's with this stone, dressed in a sari, coming before the sages saying, you know that story?
I know about the Jambavati and the jewel story, but I don't know what happened after. So like
Samba story. Okay. Well, what's being said here is Samba is a partial expansion of Kartikeya. Kartikeya is one of Shiva's sons. Ganesh is the other. Yeah. So, I'll read it again. Just as Krishna respected Shiva and accepted the blessing from him of obtaining Samba, parentheses, Kartikeya, Shiva's son, as his son. So Nanda respected Brahma, who was eager for the Lord to appear, following Brahma's instructions. Otherwise, Brahma would not say, now here's a quote from Brahma's prayers, comes a later chapter. Brahma says later, "My greatest possible good fortune would be to take any birth, whatever, in this forest of Gokula, and have my head bathed by the dust falling from the lotus feet of any of its residents. Their entire life and soul is the Lord Mukunda, the dust of whose lotus feet is sought even today by the Upanishads." So there's a quote by Brahma about the exalted nature of Vrindavan and his desire to take birth anywhere, any kind of a blade of grass or anything at all, so the dust of the residents of Raja would fall on his grass body. And then he concludes, this is described in detail in Bhagavatamrita. What's Bhagavatamrita? It's a book written by Sanatan Goswami that's like a commentary on Srimad Bhagavatam. It's printed by the BBT. It's about this thick. It's three volumes. Each volume is, so it's really nice. And I'm going to read two verses in purports. Sanatan Goswami wrote the book, and then he wrote the commentary on the book. So what we're reading is his commentary. So it's, the conversation is between Narada, who's speaking, and there's two other people present before him. One is the one he's speaking to, that's Gopakumar. Gopakumar is a cowherd boy, and he wants to see Krishna. And then the other is Uddhava. Uddhava is the one that carried the message from Krishna to the gopis. That's Uddhava. So Narada is speaking. "Lord Brahma grew to understand better than anyone else the special glories of Gokula, the abode of all Krishna's pastimes. So with great respect, he praised the Supreme Lord who embodies the exalted tastes of pure love in Vraja." And here's Sanatana Goswami's commentary. Brahma's defeat by Krishna in their match of wits, that was, Brahma wanted to see what's the extent of Krishna's power. So he kidnapped the calves and cowherd boys to see what Krishna would do, and you know what Krishna did. Brahma's defeat by Krishna in their match of wits not only humbled Brahma, but also elevated him in understanding of Krishna's pastimes in Gokula, so much so that Narada calls him Mahatmya Vishesha Vittama, which means, quote, "the best of those who know the special glories of Gokula." We find evidence of Brahma's understanding in his solemn prayer to Krishna, which as we just read, 1.14.34. I'll read it again. "My greatest possible good fortune would be to take any birth whatever in this forest of Gokula and have my head bathed by the dust falling from the lotus feet of any of its residents." This is Brahma. He's the, you know, he's big guy. He's the creator of the universe. And that's like, not, it's a simple thing. But when he sees this situation in Vrindavan, that's far, far greater than anything he has in his possession. Their entire life and soul is the Supreme Personality of Godhead, Mukunda, the dust of whose lotus feet is being searched for in the Vedic mantras. Paragraph. Brahma became qualified to praise Krishna suitably by realizing him as the reservoir of all the ecstatic moods of Braja Prema. In many verses of Srimad Bhagavatam, Sri Shukadeva Goswami expertly describes these very varieties of rasa. For example, this is going back in chapter 13 of Canto 10. It's the cowherd boys playing. The mothers of the boys, upon hearing the sounds of the flutes and bugles played by their sons, immediately rose from their household tasks, lifted their boys onto their laps, embraced them with both arms, and began to feed them with their breast milk, which flowed forth because of extreme love specifically for Krishna. Actually, Krishna is everything. But at the same time, expressing extreme love and affection, they took special pleasure in feeding Krishna, the Parabrahman, and Krishna drank the milk from his respective mothers as if it were a nectarian beverage. This is when they were the 1 year that passed, and Krishna was the cowherd boys and the calves. Next, Brahma himself also very competently described these rasas in his prayers. This is text 31 from his prayers. Oh, almighty Lord, how greatly fortunate are the cows and ladies of Vrindavan, the nectar of whose breast milk you have happily drunk to your full satisfaction, taking the form of their calves and children. All the Vedic sacrifices performed from time immemorial up to the present day have not given you as much satisfaction. That is, Krishna's most pleased by the residents of Vrindavan. And one more verse, Brihat Bhagavatamrita. It's later section. One who is greedy to drink the nectar at Krishna's lotus feet knows how exalted are the devotees who relish it. Lord Brahma, therefore, longs to come in touch with the greatness of those born in Gokula, and our friend Uddhava, because he's right there, the three of them, Narada, Uddhava, and Gopakumar, with the special greatness of the gopis. Commentary reads, while describing the glories of Sri Mathura Gokula, Narada has already pointed out the glories of the Vrajavasis, but now he wants to discuss their greatness in more detail. First, he dispels all doubts about the Vrajavasis' greatness, exaltedness. In the opinion of wise spiritual authorities like Brahmaji and Uddhava, the residents of Braja are the most fortunate persons. Brahma showed in his prayers to Krishna in Vrindavan that he is eager not only to become Krishna's servant, but more specifically, to be given a little of the good fortune possessed by the Vrajavasis. Brahma said in that same verse, here's Uddhava spoke a similar praise to the gopis. This is when he visits Vrindavan with the letter from Krishna. The gopis of Vrindavan have given up the association of their husbands, sons, and other family members, who are very difficult to give up, and have forsaken the path of chastity to take shelter of the lotus feet of Mukunda Krishna, which one should search for by Vedic knowledge. Oh, let me be fortunate enough to be one of the bushes, creepers, or herbs in Vrindavan, because the gopis trample them and bless them with the dust of their lotus feet. Then the final paragraph from Brihat Bhagavatamrita. One should not think that Brahma's aspiration for any birth at all in Vrindavan is better than Uddhava's specific desire for a birth in which he can have his head, on his head, the dust from the gopis' feet. Brahma, after all, is the appointed ruler of the material world. And similarly, to become a pure servant of Krishna would be a great success for him. Uddhava, however, already being Krishna's intimate servant and friend, will be satisfied only by becoming one of Krishna's dearmost devotees. As a general rule, people desire what they lack. The prayers of both Brahma and Uddhava, each in their own way, are completely fitting. And one more, and we're going to end. This is Shukadev. This is Jiva Goswami speaking on this verse. And here's the verse again. Text 51. It's from Krishna Sandarbha. Therefore, O Maharaj Parikshit, O best of the Bharatas, when the Supreme Personality of Godhead becomes the son of Nanda Maharaj and Yashoda, they maintain continuous, unswerving devotional love and parental affection. And in their association, all the other inhabitants of Vrindavan, the gopas and gopis, develop the culture of Krishna bhakti. So, and this is one short concluding statement. In this verse, the word putra bhuta indicates that because of the intense parental affection felt by Vasudev, Devaki, Nanda, and Yashoda for Lord Krishna, the Lord became their son. Without intense parental love for him, it is not possible for one to get the Lord as a son. And that's it for this evening. Continue tomorrow. Something that we heard in the course of all this, well, is the theme overall is the exalted nature of Yashoda and Nanda. Of course, the exalted nature of the residents of Vrindavan in general, compared to any other They're special. In any religious teaching or theology, there's an idea of God, and God is great, and you should love God, and so forth. What our communications minister for ISKCON, Anuttama Prabhu, who's also been serving as the GBC for the Midwest area here, shared something with me. In his service as communications minister for 15 years, he's been regularly going to interfaith meetings. Interfaith. People from different, they get together, especially So especially in Washington DC, it's important. It's an important place and they have gatherings. So he goes, he's the representative of Hinduism, or at least, specifically Hare Krishna. And he shared this with me, that the man that's for a long period of time, for many years, has been the organizer, the chief spokesperson for that interfaith group in Washington, spoke to him on the side in a little private conversation. He said, in Christianity, we always emphasize God loves you. And you are always emphasizing serving God. And I really like it. And I think I'm going to start speaking like that from the pulpit, from the place where ministers speak. It's when you receive from somebody, like, you know, so you receive from your mother. So when you receive and you receive and you receive, it's nice to say thank you. And then it's another step to say, what can I do for you? So this priest was saying, I really like the idea. It's not just God loves you and we receive things from that person who loves us. He maintains us. Nityo nityanam chetanas chetananam. Eko bahunam yo vidadati kaman. The Vedas say this one maintains the many. He is the supplier of everything. All necessities of life come from that one source. And so there should be some gratitude for that one source that from which everything comes. And when you have gratitude, what do? You render some service. So the residents in Vrindavan, they're at the highest level of the mood of service, so much so they can't even think about whether Krishna is God or not. They just want to serve him. And that what's being said here is, without that intensity of love, parental affection, Krishna is not going to become somebody's son. It's very, very special and very intense, the strength of their love. And in the case of, it's repeatedly spoken, Vasudeva and Devaki, they underwent austerities, but Nanda Yashoda, they didn't undergo austerities. That's who they are. They didn't attain their position, their direct expansion from Krishna eternally, because he likes. And they do what he likes, and they like doing what he likes. They like doing what he likes, and he likes their doing what he likes. It's a loving relationship. And in the course of that loving relationship, so many things. He's naughty. He shows his opulences. He cries. He shows the universe. He lifts the Govardhan Hill. And, you know, it goes from one feature of his unlimited potencies being extended and then withdrawn, and the next thing he's doing something else. It's just like a river that just keeps flowing and flowing, and there's varieties of moods within the river, of the river moving fast, the river moving slow, and so forth. Just like when Krishna was bound by the rope of Mother Yashoda, we sing the song, and his whole body was trembling. His shark-shaped earrings were shaking. Tears were streaming down his cheeks. He's fearful. And then when he's bound by the mortar, next thing he's doing is he's, okay, Narada gave us commitment that these two fellows, Nalaka Viramani Griva, that I would deliver them, so I better go deliver them. Just like seamlessly move from one thing to the next thing, just to reciprocate with his devotees out of love for his devotees. And that's Krishna. And the intensity of one's love for Krishna results in different experiences. But it's, that's the internal potency, and the internal potency carries us above and beyond the struggle of the external potency. It's just naturally so. So just by hearing these activities, it helps to carry us to that place, that consciousness, Krishna consciousness place. And very soon we're going to finish the chapter. Okay. Any discussion? What we've been doing? Yes. Anything in the room first, and then we'll see if there's some questions online. Keep going. Just keep speaking. He'll adjust the volume.
I have a couple of questions. One is from my daughter last night. Ironically, she suddenly asked me this question. I give some answer, but I wanted to know from you. Her question was, does Krishna want to be recognized as Supreme Personality of Godhead? Does he want to be treated and respected as Supreme Personality of Godhead?
Pretty close. That's it?
Yeah.
She's giving some qualifier. Go ahead.
She's correcting me. Does Krishna want to be treated like a friend or God?
What Krishna wants is Krishna wants to reciprocate with everyone. So some people want friend. Some people want worshipable Lord. Some persons want enemy, competition. So Krishna just reciprocates. So what does Krishna want? He wants our love, and depending upon how we extend our love to him, he reciprocates. He especially likes the residents of Vrindavan. He especially likes the residents of Vrindavan. And the reason is because their love is unrestricted. But there's some that have friend, some, but none of them in Vrindavan see him as God. All powerful, supreme, let me worship him because he's all powerful and supreme. None of them see like that. When they do, for just a moment, it's like a curtain and then close the curtain. And they forget all that. So it's just, but it's sweetness more than majesty. So Krishna likes the sweetness more. Does that answer your question? Let's give a worldly example. Supposing there's a big man, a businessman or a government man or a, you know, somebody like that. Somebody like really important personality. And people get around him and they hear from him. Pay attention. This is your question. And so there's his public, you know, image. Then he's home with his family and his son is climbing on his back and saying, you know, horsey, get up, let's go. And so his son or grandson is riding on his back and that's more attractive than the big public image. Now, that's natural. Now, some people are just like super proud and they don't care anything for family. They care about their public image. Some people are like that. But Krishna's not like that. He'll take the profile if it's required. That's what he does in Vaikuntha. But in Krishna Loka, he's more attracted to the intimacy. But there's also varieties. But he'll reciprocate with the love of anyone. As they regard him, he'll be there for them. Okay.
From today's class, I have some questions.
Okay.
So, the second category is
Can you adjust the volume? Go ahead, keep speaking.
So the second category
from the heavenly planets, the beings from there, they will come to earthly where Krishna is born and then
assist him in his pastimes.
Right. So that is second category. Third category is, you said sadhana siddhas. So, are sadhana siddhas equivalent to
Raghavendra Bhaktas? That's a nice question. To enter into Krishna's Vrindavan pastimes, yes.
So then we have to become Raghavendra Bhaktas to be able to...
Well, if you're a follower of Lord Chaitanya, that's where you're going. When you get on the train, that's where the train's going. We're not there yet, but that's where the train's going.
So then, it is true that Vaidhi Sadhana is mandatory before one comes to Raghavendra.
Yes. We have to qualify ourselves. Okay?
One last question. It's just more personal for me. When I was growing up, I was not in a really very educated family.
Educated, okay.
So, we were mostly shouting at each other and not really talking very nicely, like talking polite. So, many times I get a feedback saying, maybe you can be more polite. So, yes.
Currently.
Many times I do get it in the here and there.
Okay, okay.
So, I do have to change. I'm in this process where we have to change our nature to get to that loving relationship with Krishna.
So,
to make that practice of being more polite, like, can you give me any suggestions, like guidance, like how, any ideas to practice?
Well, here's one. You know what the golden rule is? You've heard of that? The golden rule? You can look it up, but I'll tell you. I'll send you a document. It's already there. In all cultures of the world, not only all religions of the world, but all cultures of the world, there's this rule that says you should treat others as you would want others to treat you. So when you become, like when Ningaraju picked me up at the airport today, as I was getting into the car, there was a girl standing there waiting to get picked up, and her t-shirt said, "Be kind." Because you would want people to be kind to you. So be kind to others. Do unto others as you would have others do unto you. That's the golden rule. That's the biblical saying, but it's in all teachings. It's in Mahabharata. It's all over the place. It's all over the place. All cultures. So, before you speak or do, think, were the roles to be reversed, how would I want someone to deal with me? And then you do that. It takes a while, but it's a lifestyle or a principle or value. And then here's a suggestion. This we discussed in January. Maybe you remember the suggestion. The exercise. This came up just during this recent visit also. Someone wanted to develop a certain quality. It was a teenager that wanted to, not react when people said harsh things and so on. So, because I don't like when I get like that. So, at the end of the day or sometime during the day, you pull out a little journal and you reflect on key decisions you made during the day of what to say or what to do or something. And then you look at the decisions that were made or the actions that were taken that were important. And did that decision or action align with your values? And if it didn't align with your values, where did it come from? And I want to get more towards my speech and behavior, that the observable things that I do matches what's inside. I want alignment. And then when you start to do like that on a regular basis, you'll do it automatically as the day unfolds. You'll be monitoring am I aligned with my values? And then you'll become more clear, this is important, what your values are. Because without going through that exercise, right now the value is, however you might want to say it, be less harsh or be more thoughtful or be more kind when you speak and do things in relation to people. Be more thoughtful. Well, how is this going to impact them?
Mixes with the modes of three modes, like mode of goodness, mode of passion, and mode of ignorance.
Yes.
And in the mode of passion, I say whatever, not really be thoughtful. But if I'm more in mode of goodness, then I will be more thoughtful.
Yes, naturally. And the exercise suggested is to help you move more to goodness. Just the exercise itself is designed to do like that. Because for example, you could do that for 2 days, 3 days, but to do it for a sustained period of time, that requires mode of goodness.
Thank you so much, Mahavishnu. It will help me to start practicing and maybe change one
day. That's just a suggestion or an exercise. It's a good one. There's a step that goes beyond that, and that is, what's the reason? What's the deeply held reality about my existence that I want to align my values with and align my behaviors with? Like, who am I? Or what's really important to me? I mean, besides, like, be more kind and be less harsh. What's, in a deeper level, the deeper level is, you have to discover it, not just check the box in your Bhakti Shastri exam. But it's, I want to be pleasing to Krishna. Self-improvement has a deeper purpose. Bhakti. Acting for the pleasure of Krishna. And are my values aligned with that? And are my behaviors aligned with my values and with that? Okay.
Mic is not working, Guru Maharaj, so
where's the little one? The little one's not working also? Okay.
This is Radha Kunjabihari Prabhu. Who is a sadhaka siddha and what can we learn from them?
Who is a sadhaka siddha and what can we learn from them? Well, because we've been speaking about it a lot for this session,
Suttapan Prishni became sadhaka siddhas. They did, or Dhruva Maharaj became a sadhaka siddha. And what can we learn from them? they're role models, and we can understand that what are the elements that help them become siddha, and not just, you know, the particular actions that they performed, but the purpose that kept those particular actions moving forward. Mercy of Narada in the case of Dhruva. And strong determination. There's other examples.
This is Govinda Mohini Mataji. And Atulya Mataji also has similar question. You mentioned that once one becomes perfected in sadhana, they go for an apprenticeship to learn how to do service, their service. But does it mean that they don't go back to Godhead? Could you please explain this again?
Yeah, there's a warm up, a practice session before going back to Godhead.
This Uttama Bhakta Prabhu, Srila Prabhupada mentions two types of souls, fallible and infallible. Is that a permanent position or subject to use of our free will? If subject, how do both terms stand?
Well, it's subject to our free will and mercy. And to become eligible for mercy, then there's practices that we take up with our free will and appeal for mercy from the personality of Godhead. So, you know, there's different sadhanas and there's different aspirations for achieving things.
He has a second question, Uttama Bhakta Prabhu. Regarding interfaith, not only we practice how to love God in His personal form, but also have a female aspect of God who is amazingly merciful,
yeah,
which doesn't exist anywhere else. Is that correct?
Well, not exactly. I mean, there are Shaktas that don't have a personal form, and they worship the merciful female, Shakti. So it's not so simple like that. That's it?
This is from Sri Kishore Prabhu. I have a question about Drona and Dhara. You mentioned that they are blessed to be parents of Krishna whenever he incarnates in this world. There are incarnations like Narsimha and Kurma who apparently do not have mother and father.
That's right.
And so no Vatsalya Rasa exchange.
Right.
How is this boon fulfilled in such incarnations?
It's not. That our acharyas specifically speak. You know, the pillar is not the mother pillar. Or Varaha appears from the nostril of Brahma. So it's not, you know, mother nostril. There's not a mother figure in the, because he doesn't require anything. He doesn't require a mother. He's accepting that position as a son from Nanda and Yashoda or Vasudeva and Devaki because of their particular affection, parental affection. But it doesn't require that at all. It's just reciprocating with their affection. Okay. How about your other daughter? Anything?
Yep. All for me.
Yeah, anything.
No, I understood it completely. It was great.
Okay. Okay. Good for you.
Yeah, she's been reading Srila Prabhupada Lila Mrita.
Uh-huh.
So I'm on volume 4, she's volume 1.
Uh-huh.
So she's asking me questions from volume 1.
thinking I remember everything what I do.
Good. Good. Very good. That's your summer reading project?
Yeah.
Good. Good. Okay, Srila Prabhupada ki jai.